This is the Agribusiness Report, and today, highlights from a House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation Research and Biotechnology Conservation hearing in a moment. First off, FSA Administrator Bill Bean.
Producers are not required to submit an application for payment. However, they must have the following forms on file with the Farm Service Agency: the CC-853, the Form AD-2047, Form CCC-902, Form CCC-901, Farm FSA Form 510, and SF-3881. Direct deposit, and AD-1026, which is our highly erodible conservation and wetland conservation certification. Producers can confirm the status of their forms by contacting their local FSA office.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Well, earlier in the week, House Ag Committee Subcommittee on Conservation Research and Biotechnology holding a hearing on supporting farmers, strengthening conservation, and sustaining working lands. Led by the former chairman of the entire committee and the chairman of the subcommittee from Oklahoma, Frank Lucas.
Welcome to today's Conservation Research and Biotechnology Subcommittee hearing. Today, we'll be examining Farm Bill conservation programs and hearing from a distinguished panel of witnesses from their perspectives. Title II of the Farm Bill authorizes a suite of conservation programs that are critical for supporting the long-term viability of farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. These programs have the dual benefit of supporting the producer and addressing pressing national natural resource concerns at the local level. As we have today's discussion, hear about the programs, and discuss potential improvements, it's important that we have some context for why and how our system of farm conservation developed over many years. The roots of our conservation system date back to the 1930s and the actions that the federal government took in response to the Dust Bowl. In the 19th century, the Homestead Act was enacted with the best of intentions, but it had unintended consequences. When settlers came west in search of fertile land to farm, it didn't take long for them to realize that the sandy soils in the southern Great Plains were susceptible to erosion when unprotected, or not protected, I should say, by native vegetation. Coupled with severe drought conditions, this led to massive dust storms in Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas in the 1930s. Perhaps the worst fell on April 14, 1935, the day that has become known as Black Sunday. The dust storms were so severe, their effects were felt far beyond the southern Great Plains, gathering attention of lawmakers in Washington. Only 13 days after Black Sunday, President Roosevelt signed legislation into law establishing the then-named Soil Conservation Service. Renamed the Natural Resources Conservation Service in 1996, the agency administers most of the Farm Bill conservation programs and provides technical assistance for others administered by the Farm Service Agency. Voluntary conservation practices are critically important for supporting agriculture and ensuring we don't have another Dust Bowl again. With this year marking the 90th anniversary of both Black Sunday and the establishment of the now-named NRCS, today's hearing is timely to hear more about these programs and how Congress may be able to further improve them. We are currently in the second extension of the 2018 Farm Bill, and rural America badly needs legislation to reflect the current status of agriculture and the rural economy. This extends to conservation programs and reforms we can include to build on the progress we've made in recent farm bills. Last year's committee-passed farm bill proposed historic new funding for conservation programs. By rescinding the unobligated Inflation Reduction Act funding and reinvesting it in Title II, the House-passed reconciliation bill similarly reinvests the unobligated IRA funding into the conservation title. Reallocating those dollars would increase the title's baseline over the long term, making it a permanent investment in conservation programs. It also allows for continued support for orphan programs, increased funding for successful programs like Small Watershed Program, and the creation of new forestry easement program. In addition to funding, last year's bill placed an emphasis on science, technology, and innovation. The bill makes precision agriculture specifically eligible for cost share under EQIP and CSP, requires more frequent updates to conservation practice standards, and creates an Office of Innovation at the Office of the Secretary. The bill streamlines RCPP, provides common sense flexibility for ACEP, and reforms the Technical Service Provider Program. The bill also proposes a modernization of CRP and focusing the program on marginal lands by incorporating soil capacity class into rental rates for general enrollment. These are all welcome changes intended to improve program administration and make them more producer-friendly. Farm Bill conservation programs have been so successful because they are voluntary, incentive-based, and producer-first. The programs have also been so effective because they are locally led, which allows for states and regions to determine the priority natural resource concerns. As we think about the next Farm Bill, it's important for us to keep all of this in mind. Conservation programs have been so effective because of the flexibility built into them and because we have continually encouraged the local-led process to work. I'm proud of the work that this committee has done over the past several Farm Bill cycles to improve the programs because we know voluntary conservation works.
Chairman of the House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation Research and Biotechnology, Frank Lucas. It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton. To expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. And today, highlights from a recent House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation Research and Biotechnology hearing, looking at supporting farmers, strengthening conservation, sustaining working lands. The ranking member of that committee, Jill Takuda from Hawaii.
As ranking member, I'm proud to join you and our colleagues in reaffirming a shared commitment to supporting America's farmers, ranchers, and producers through smart, effective conservation policy. I also want to thank our panel of witnesses for being here today and extend an especially warm mahalo to Nicole Galase for traveling all the way, I think she came the farthest, all the way from Hawaii to share the perspective of food producers operating in some of the most remote and climate-vulnerable parts of the country. Now, let's begin with some common ground. USDA conservation programs work. Whether it's EQIP, CSP, ACEP, RCPP, the whole alphabet soup of acronyms, these programs provide practical tools to improve soil health, manage water more efficiently, and keep operations productive and resilient. But here's the hard truth. The weather isn't what it used to be, no matter what you want to call it. Climate change, extreme weather, shifting seasons. Our producers are living it every day. Longer droughts, harder rains, heat waves in April, frost in May. It's getting harder to grow the food, fuel, and fiber that this country relies on. And that's not a partisan talking point. It's reality for farmers and ranchers across this country. Programs like EQIP and CSIP can help producers adapt. But they've been chronically underfunded for decades, turning away thousands of qualified farmers each year, not because the programs don't work, but because demand far exceeds supply. That's why the Inflation Reduction Act was such a turning point. The conservation investments in the IRA weren't just a budget line, they were a statement, a bold, time-limited, once-in-a-generation effort to meet demand head-on and finally give producers the access and the technical support they need to take on the challenges they're facing today. Now, yes, we've seen bills that move IRA dollars into the baseline USDA conservation budget, and that is a good thing. And on the surface, that might look like a step towards stability, but let's not lose sight of what made the IRA conservation funding different and powerful. The IRA wasn't about business as usual. It was about breaking the logjam. It opened the floodgates to let more farmers and more ranchers get the support they've been asking for many, many years. And let me be clear, this is not about left or right. It's about forward. Whether you're in red states, blue states, purple states, or farm country right in between, producers are not asking for politics. They're asking for access, for flexibility, for conservation tools that make their land more resilient, their water more efficient, and their operations more secure. Because their livelihoods, as you all know, depend on it. And so does our nation's food supply. So as we move forward, whether a farm bill or broader conservation planning, let's protect not just the dollars, but the spirit behind what was in the IRA. Urgency, scale, and the recognition that changing conditions require bold action, not modest tweaks. So let's make sure that in the name of stability, we don't slip back into scarcity. Our producers don't need diluted promises. They need real, timely, farmer-focused support because the weather's not waiting, and neither should we. I look forward to our dialogue today and to working with this committee to continue improving the effectiveness of NRCS programs, supporting our staff, and supporting Americans' agriculture through thoughtful and innovative conservation practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report, and today, highlights from a recent House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation Research and Biotechnology hearing on conservation. The chairman of the committee, the entire House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson.
As a former chairman of this subcommittee, I've been proud to support these programs, and I've seen firsthand how voluntary conservation directly benefits the producer, soil and water, wildlife habitat, and so much more. Title II programs have been so successful for many reasons, fundamentally because our model of conservation is voluntary, incentive-based, and locally led. The locally led part is important, and we must continue to protect that aspect of the programs as we consider reforms within a new farm bill. The Farm Food and National Security Act was passed by this committee last year and contains many bipartisan priorities in its conservation title to build on the gains that we've made in recent farm bills. This includes reforms to improve the administration of RCPP, ACP, and the Small Watershed Program. The bill encourages more innovation in the programs by requiring more frequent updates to conservation practice standards and makes precision agriculture eligible for cost share in EQIP and CSP. It also proposed a modernization of CRP and important improvements to the Technical Services Provider Program. And while these are just some of the reforms this committee can take to improve the administration of each program, we also have a tremendous opportunity this Congress to bolster conservation programs over the long term with significant new funding. The Farm Food and National Security Act also proposed rescinding the unobligated IRA conservation funding and reallocating it into Title II. House Republicans are now trying to provide similar reinvestment through the reconciliation process. Instead of letting the IRA funding expire, investing it would provide additional funding for the programs that we all know work and increase the baseline for the conservation title into perpetuity. Rural America continues to face great economic challenges, and I look forward to working with all of you on strategic investments and policy updates to meet the needs of our producers and the agricultural value chain. Thank you again to our witnesses for your time today, and we look forward to hearing your testimonies and appreciate your expertise with the Farm Bill Conservation Programs.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
As the first week of emergency payments to producers qualified under USDA's Emergency Livestock Relief Program wraps up.
If you qualify for the loss, you should be receiving a payment in the mail if you've not received it already.
Farm Service Agency Administrator Bill Beam says the payment released May 30th covers grazing losses due to eligible drought or wildfire events in 2023 and or 2024.
Farm Service Agency is issuing emergency relief payments to ranchers who have approved applications through the Livestock Forage Disaster Program for grazing losses due to eligible drought or wildfire.
Further supplemental disaster assistance payments and timelines for such, including emergency livestock relief program payments for flooding, are found online at www.fsa.usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.